and welcome to this Rash Decisions podcast, where we look at skin-related issues, conditions and treatments in an interesting and informative way. I'm Dr. Roger Henderson. I'm a GP with a long-standing interest in this particular area of health.
And I'm Dr. George Moncrief. I was also a GP, though I've now retired from my practice, and I was the chair of the Dermatology Council for England.
Now today, George and I are going to be talking about the treatment of rosacea, and this is the second of two podcasts about this very common skin problem. And if you were with us for the first one, where we talked about the basics of the condition, then George and I do hope you found that helpful. So to kick off this week's podcast, George, let's not dive into medication straight away, although that's obviously crucial, but let's first chat about some general treatment principles here, which for rosacea particularly, I think, are so important.
I agree. Lifestyle changes should play a huge part in our approach to helping patients with this distressing condition. Trigger avoidance is key. So I talked about the diary last time, and I would suggest patients keep a diary to find out what their triggers are, to show what, for their individual case, what's happening and why they're getting the triggers. And then the patient can make a decision. If they get home from a stressful day at work and they're desperate for a glass of wine and some cheese and a hot curry, and they know that that combination is going to give them a trigger, well, that's their choice. And they may well feel that that's what they'd rather do tonight because today was such a stressful day. So trigger avoidance, knowing what your triggers are, can be very, very helpful. But because UV light is such a common cause of triggering in rosacea, I advise that all patients with rosacea should use a high factor UVB and UVA sunblock all year round, even on a cloudy day, even if they're going to be staying indoors, still use a sunblock on your face and the other areas where you're getting rosacea. Generally try to keep out of direct sunlight, and perhaps consider wearing a wide-brimmed hat to keep your head in the shade and your face in the shade would be a good idea. And by high factor, I suppose it hasn't got to be that high a factor, but make sure it's got a UVA block in it as well. So ideally a 3 or 4 star rating UVA block. And to be honest, actually, I think the sort of sunblock that you have in face creams for women, that's their foundation, sort of factor 15 is probably okay for most of the year anyway. UVB is very weak in the winter and at the extremes of day and on cloudy days. So you don't need a very strong UVB to give you the protection you need from UVB. The second thing to say is that the skin in rosacea is sensitive. So avoid detergents. I hate soap, but this is a situation where I would definitely say avoid soaps and other detergents, and maybe wash instead with a soap substitute emollient. And the Aprederm range here are ideal. For example, I use Aprederm gel to wet shave through. But you can use Aprederm gel as a soap substitute in the shower. It will make the shower tray a bit slippery, so you may need to warn your patients. But I think an emollient to wash with, which we've discussed before, is a great idea. And don't forget that shampoo is a powerful detergent. So by all means, wash your hair, but don't let the shampoo wash down over the rosacea-affected areas of skin. It will aggravate things. So that's another powerful detergent to avoid. Similarly, patients should generally try and avoid fragrances on the face, particularly those that contain alpha hydroxy acids or ascorbic acids. They will aggravate things, but patients usually find that out for themselves. Any exposure of the facial skin to a topical steroid can massively aggravate things. And that can even be from using some Kinestin HC or Dactacort. Trivial amounts of 1% hydrocortisone can make things dramatically worse. I've even seen it aggravated by the mist around a spray from a hay fever spray or an asthma spray. If that gets onto the face, it can make rosacea worse. As can putting a steroid on another part of your body, or perhaps treating your child's eczema. You think you've washed your hand, you think you've got it all off, but the tiny residue can then get on your face and that can make things worse. So watch out for that. Another little tip is using a green tinted makeup. That can go a long way to masking that background redness. And I even suggest men use it. What do you like that?
I do. I have said that, and men involuntarily take about three steps backwards when I say that. And when they wear it, you cannot tell. It is not like putting, you know, what I call conventional makeup on. You just cannot tell. And usually they come back and go, you know, well, it was a great tip, Doc. I don't tell anybody, but my wife knows. But you know, it's fantastic. It is really, really helpful. It's got to be the green tinted one, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. The green tint will mask that permanent background redness. Yes. And particularly when you get to the more inflammatory end of the spectrum, to the papular pustular sort of rosacea, this is a dry skin condition. Don't be put off by seeing a bit of scale there. It's still rosacea. So this is a situation where I'd want to recommend a quality leave-on emollient, something like the Apoderm Colloidal. Absolutely ideal there. It has nice... I find it sort of anti-inflammatory a bit as well. So that would be an option I'd look for. The other one I really like is, as an alternative, if you're happy with gels, is Adex gel. That's a double base with nicotinamide. And nicotinamide is a remarkable ingredient. It improves the production of the skin barrier through increasing lamellar action. But it also has anti-inflammatory properties. So this wonderful vitamin B3 can be very effective. And although it's only licensed for eczema, I use Adex gel for a number of other skin conditions besides rosacea. I use it for my patients on isotretinoin for acne, patients with psoriasis, patients with Grover's disease, and so on, and even pemphigoid. And so I think nicotinamide has a very, very important anti-inflammatory role, and I love it in this topical product.
Yes, fantastic. I mean, when we typically see patients or patients decide to present in front of us, one of the triggers, no pun intended, that have brought them to us is the facial flushing and the redness. That's the thing that initially seems to cause the most concern, affect their quality of life the most. They feel they've been driven in front of us because they really are fed up with the flushing and redness. So if we look at the flushing side of things in terms of treatment, what sort of patterns of treatment should we be thinking about going through when we're just thinking of treating the flushing and the redness there, George?
Well, obviously, apart from trying to avoid triggers, yeah. I think the first thing to say is that I don't think topical antibiotics have any role here at all. And I haven't prescribed a topical antibiotic for this pattern of rosacea for decades. So your metronidazole gels or other antibiotic options are not going to be effective at helping the flushing. By far, the most effective topical treatment we have is brimolidine. That's Mivezo gel. Now, the brimolidine, we've been using it for years as Alphagan, as an eye drop for glaucoma. So we put it into the conjunctival sac without any hesitation for years and years and years. It's not causing any problems, and it works to treat. So when they put it into a gel for the face, I was very relaxed about trying it, and it is powerful stuff. The problem with it is it does cause some stinging for patients when they first start to use it. And if they persevere with it, usually that stinging calms down. But one little tip there, there's a product called Tolerian Ultra made by L'Oreal, and it's got an ingredient called neurosensin. And neurosensin renders the nerve endings a lot less sensitive. Unfortunately, Tolerian Ultra does cause a little bit of stinging when you first use it, but it's fairly minor and patients can tolerate that. And they put it on twice a day for a week or so, and then they'll find they can put the Mivezo on without any problem at all. So it's a useful way of getting them to tolerate Mivezo. And once they're using Mivezo, then they will find that they'll develop tolerance to that, and they don't get the stinging so much. The other thing is to put it on cold from the fridge. That can help. Yeah. The other problem with Mivezo is it's just too effective. And it can render that background redness completely white. And you can even do knots and crosses if you want with it. It's that dramatic. But it doesn't constrict the vessels that have lost their muscle control. So those teleangiectatic vessels are then just rendered much more visible. And patients often are very upset by that. They'd rather have the background redness masking that. Yes. And so it can be a bit too effective. And of course, there are not many parts of the country where you can prescribe it. So it's not available on the NHS. You have to give the patient a private prescription. So Mivezo is my absolute favorite. If I can persuade the patient to give it a go. The other thing it can do is it can cause rebound dye flushing when it wears off. But it lasts a good 12 hours. So I'd normally recommend putting Mivezo on in the morning. And then by the end of the day, they're at home and it's in bed and it's unlikely to be a problem. And that usually isn't too big a problem. Occasionally, provided they're not contraindicated, your patient hasn't got asthma or something, or Raynaud's, a beta blocker can be very effective. Taken by mouth, just one in the morning. The one I like is carbidolol. So I'd recommend that. And there are certain patients, I think, who might benefit more from that than others, particularly if it's not contraindicated.
Yeah, I have occasionally picked a patient with rosacea who's highly anxious, and their anxiety and stress that seems to be driving along their repeated episodes of flushing and redness. And I have found an oral beta blocker really can work on both. And it's a bit of a chicken and egg, which one's it treating the best? And I suspect in those cases, it's treating the anxiety and the adrenaline and the stress that then has the impact on the rosacea. So you can very nicely get a double whammy. I seem to remember going back, and I haven't done this forever really, but I do seem to remember that clonidine was touted around for rosacea, but I can't remember seeing anyone on it for decades, probably, George.
No, I haven't. I remember thinking about it sort of in the 1980s and as an option before we had things like Mavazo. Well, that was certainly available 10 years ago, but certainly in the 80s it was an option we considered. But it's limited by nasty side effects, and you've got to introduce it gently and things. No, it's an old-fashioned treatment option, and I think being superseded. I suppose if you had a patient with bad asthma who couldn't tolerate brimolidine, it would cross my mind.
Yeah, but we'd probably put that one to bed. So if that's the facial flushing and the redness, when you then see the patient who comes in with rosacea and they've then got the broken capillaries, the blood vessels starting to appear, it's not that my heart sinks when I see those compared to a patient with simple background flushing, but I start thinking we're in for a slightly trickier time here to start pulling them back. Would you, in your experience, would you say that's you know, fair to say?
Yes, I think so. We haven't got any options available to us in primary care for this.
Yeah.
That's the real problem. And the NHS doesn't provide the treatment for them. But so it's tricky from that point of view. But you could offer them, you could talk about camouflage creams. That's definitely an option. And put them in touch with changing faces. That's certainly a thought. But it's not an ideal long-term option. The only really effective treatments are available privately. And I do urge patients to go to a respected dermatologist, not to a high street laser clinic or anything like that. Definitely yes. Go to a respected dermatology specialist who has an interest in laser treatments and intense pulsed light or pulsed dye lasers. These can be very effective indeed, and they're a permanent remedy. So the patient has these dilated vessels, their individual vessels are treated, you can treat small patches at a time. It may need four or maybe five treatments, perhaps five at most, each treatment costing a few hundred pounds. And I agree that's a lot of money to ask someone to pay for, but it's not available in the NHS. It's a permanent remedy for their telangiectasia. And I think for some patients, that's an option that they are prepared to consider as being perhaps more important than a holiday or changing their car.
Absolutely. When I've spoken to patients who've had that, they all say, yes, that's a big chunk of money I had to find. But in terms of payback for quality of life, they say, I would happily do it again because it revolutionizes some of their lives.
It's on their face. It's so visible. And the end result is back to normal looking skin.
Absolutely. And interestingly, they get a lot of positive feedback from other people who see them. They say, oh, you look so much better. Your face looks... And almost indirectly, they get complimented for having the rosacea treated, yeah. Which makes them feel better. But rosacea spots, again, once we've got the diagnosis and we're happy with the diagnosis, if you're unfortunate enough to suffer from quite often quite nasty rosacea spots, there are some really effective treatments, but they, unless you know what they are, they can be tricky to treat, can't they?
Yeah, they can. And I see a lot of people walking around the streets who've still got very nasty inflammatory papular pustular rosacea. I'm just desperate to talk to them because I know we've got such effective treatments. This is where antibiotics are used, and they work. There's no doubt they do work. And here I go in with a tetralysinol or limacycline type antibiotic, occasionally low dose doxycycline. What I do like is 40 milligrams of modified release doxycycline, that's Efrasia, which doesn't disturb the microbiome supposedly, but I'm sure it probably does. But antibiotics here are being used for their anti-inflammatory side effects. We're not primarily using them as antibiotics. And I just think that's a little bit extravagant to put somebody onto long-term antibiotics. They have an impact on their microbiome and, of course, on antimicrobial resistance. I actually haven't prescribed metronidazole for rosacea for decades. I'll come on to why not a bit later, but I don't use metronidazole. I don't know whether you like the metronidazole preparations. They have to be used twice a day. They plateau after a couple of months. They're not that effective. I do use them for fungating tumours and things like that, where there's an odour, but I don't use them for rosacea. So if I'm going to use an antibiotic, I'd probably go with an oral antibiotic, and I wouldn't want to go on using it for more than a few months if I could help it. Yeah. If you've got fairly mild and localised inflammatory rosacea, azelaic acid can be fantastic. We've used that in a cream preparation at 20% called Skinarin for acne for years. And they put it into a gel formulation at 15%, so a bit weaker, in about 2003 or 2004. So it's been around for 20 years. And although it's significantly weaker than other options, it's a lovely, old-fashioned, safe, anti-inflammatory treatment that can work very well at keeping mild PPR at bay. Now, in papulopustular rosacea, there's a preponderance of a mite. There are only two mites that live on our skin. One is scabies, and the other is the Demodex folliculorum and Demodex brevis mites. Other mites like Ixodes ricinus, which carry Lyme disease, they don't breed on us. But those two groups of mites, the Demodex and the scabies, Sarcopteris, they breed on us, they live on us. And we all have Demodex mites on our face as part of our facial microbiome. They're there to digest the squames and the sebum around our hair follicles. And normal skin has about 2 to 5 per centimeter. In rosacea, they have an abundance, over 100 sometimes, of these Demodex mites per square centimeter. And in their, they've got no anus, but in their gut, they have a particularly noxious, nasty bacteria called Bacillus aeruginosus, which can really trigger nasty innate inflammatory immune responses. And interestingly, when the mite dies, the chitin that comes from its gut wall, its body wall, is also hugely inflammatory. For years, I had patients come to see me with troublesome, difficult inflammatory rosacea, which wasn't really being controlled by oral antibiotics. And I used permethrin, 5% permethrin cream, like we use for scabies. And it worked to treat. It knocked things back, got things under control, but generally several months later, their rosacea came back. About 10 years ago, a cream containing ivermectin became available. That's called Soolantra. And look at you smiling. It is my absolute all-time favorite topical agent. It was originally licensed for treating Strongyloides stercorale, the cause of onchocerciasis, the cause of river blindness. I've also used it on a named patient basis, just one capsule orally, for crusted scabies. Absolutely brilliant. It's a very powerful scabicide, killing mites. But this completely kills the mite. The problem is that when it kills the mite, it releases lots of chitin from their cell walls, and it also releases lots of Bacillus aeruginosus. So patients often get a bit of a flare. And I, therefore, sometimes if they've got particularly aggressive inflammatory rosacea, I might just cover that first few weeks with some very low-dose doxycycline. But they just put this cream on once a day, usually at bedtime, and within a month, their rosacea, in my experience, has melted away, and probably by killing these mites. And you can then drop it down to once a week, even just once a month. And I just say, just keep going, putting it on once a month for the rest of your natural life. It's not licensed for that, but I'm very happy for patients to be doing that. Interestingly, there's a study called the Mosaic study where patients put Soolantra on their face at bedtime and the Mivezo on their face in the morning. And in that study, normally about 50% of patients won't tolerate brimolidine, Mivezo, because of the stinging. But when you combine it with the Soolantra, the anti-inflammatory effect of the Soolantra at bedtime meant that over 95% of patients in that study tolerated the Mavesa without any stinging. So if they got both, I say you can do both and put the Mavesa on in the morning so you don't flush during the day, and the ivermectin on at bedtime. There's a new agent come out recently, one become stabilized. It's been around since the early part of the 19th century, called hypochlorous. Not hypochlorite, that's Milton or bleach. But hypochlorous is produced naturally by our neutrophils as part of our innate immune system. And it, the problem with hypochlorous was getting it into a product that was stable. Initially, it had taken them 20 years to stabilize it. It used to go off within 2 days. But now they've stabilized it for 2 to 3 years. And this, wait for it, is 80 times more potent than bleach.
Whoa.
It kills bacteria, 99.9% of bacteria, fungi, even spores and viruses. And is in a stable preparation now called Clinicept. And it's totally non-damaging to mammalian cells. Mammalian cells make it. It's part of our innate immune system, but it is lethal to these microbes. And I think that might be another option for maintaining the skin. The only worry I have, well, one of the worries I have with Clinicept or hypochlorous is it's too good and it's going to knock out the microbiome. So we may need to think about how we reseed the microbiome to cope with that. And then the final thing to mention is very rarely I've used off-license, very low-dose oral isotretinoin. It's not licensed, but you need a tiny dose. Not really suitable for women of childbearing years, because you may need to be on it for a few years. But if you've got somebody, say, 45, 50, or a man, it can be highly effective. And I think what it's doing there is it's working by starving the mites, the little buggers haven't got anything to eat. So there's no squames, there's no grease. And so they die from starvation, but a highly effective old fashioned treatment. But to be honest, since Soolantra became available, my patients with severe inflammatory rosacea don't exist anymore. It's absolutely brilliant stuff. It's one of the most amazing topical preparations to come on the market this century, certainly, or in my lifetime. Isn't it?
Absolutely, in my lifetime as well, isn't it just? Now, obviously, we often think of purely skin-linked conditional rosacea, but we touch on eye symptoms, and I think these are really important not to forget. Now, you might not need any significant intervention in someone with even quite severe rosacea if they've got no eye involvement. But if we're starting to think about possible interventions for our rosacea patients who do have eye symptoms, we're going, there's a whole spectrum, everything from simple artificial tears on a PRN basis up to specialist referral, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely. And the extraordinary thing about eye symptoms is that patients with severe rosacea may have no eye symptoms at all. And then the next patient comes in and they got severe chalazia and they got terrible problems. And so it doesn't seem to be related to the severity of the skin disease. But yeah, if you've just got simple dry eyes, then artificial tears, the one that they like, plus perhaps some simple eye ointment to last a bit longer through the night, perhaps advising them not to use contact lenses, simple treatments like that are wise. Blepharitis, I would say lid hygiene, occasionally a bit of shampoo, baby shampoo along the eyelid margin can be helpful. But I, to be honest, prefer hot saline soaks, as hot as the patient can bear. And I also use those for patients with recurrent styes. I think maybe my hypochlorous has a role here.
It's so safe. It could go almost anywhere. So the hypochlorous could go there. But you do need to use it as the hypochlorous eye preparation, which is called Purifies. I wouldn't use Clinicept Plus in or near to the eye. So for blepharitis, it's lid hygiene treatment, essentially.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. If it's more severe, you may need to consider oral antibiotics, antibiotic eye drops, or seeing an eye specialist. And interestingly, they sometimes use steroid eye drops, which I'd be jolly careful to get this on the face. But if you've got keratitis, for example, they may well need a steroid to calm that down. I've seen ivermectin used, and I've used that as well. Like, ivermectin cream is not licensed for around the eye, and the advice is to avoid getting it in the eye. But I sometimes suggest to patients, if they've got particularly nasty chalazia and eyelid involvement rather than eyeball involvement, if the eyelids are very inflamed, very, very carefully just stroking a little bit of Soolantra cream along the eyelid margin off license, so you do need to discuss it with the patient, can be highly effective as well. So that's another option we have there.
Yeah, that's really helpful tip. Now, when we started the first of these podcasts, we mentioned Rembrandt, W.C. Fields, and the reason we know they've had rosacea was because of their unfortunate noses. So I think it might be an appropriate end of this podcast to perhaps look at that sort of area. Now, the key thing, obviously, and I'm seeing this less and less, in fact, I can't think of the last case of a new rhinophyma I saw. We're seeing this less and less because the treatments are getting better and better. But the key thing is to actually prevent a rhinophyma happening in the first place. But if you do have someone who walks in and they've got an obvious rhinophyma that's developed, the blunt truth here is you've just got to chop it off, haven't you? That's really the only treatment we've got. Yeah,
bluntly. Having heard what you said there, I'm not absolutely convinced that rhinophyma is the end stage of uncontrolled rosacea. I have seen rhinophyma without any rosacea, but it is my hunch. I rather agree with you, yeah, that if you've got uncontrolled papulopustular rosacea, you're likely to be a candidate for going on to develop a rhinophyma. But I'm not too sure how strong that link is between the two conditions. But no, once you've got a rhinophyma, basically it's debulking. And in the old days, that was surgical, which wasn't so good. Now they use a CO2 cutting laser, and I have seen phenomenal results from that. A normal skin regrowing and not even looking scarred. So not available usually on the NHS, but a CO2 cutting laser can be very, very effective way of debulking this subcutaneous seborrheic material.
Yeah, that's a really optimistic note to end this treatment podcast on, and I think we've covered, you know, an enormous range of treatments here, which does give hope to us, and I do think that's a good place to bring this episode to a close. And George and I actually do hope that you found this interesting and helpful the next time you seeing a patient sitting in front of you with rosacea.
And we hope you'll join us again. We'll be discussing another skin related condition. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Acroderm, for all their help in putting these Rash Decision podcasts together. We couldn't have done it without them.
So, as always, until the next time, it's goodbye from George.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Goodbye.